Radio.
Here we go. Another night of Blog Talk Radio. Hey, I don't know. Hey, you're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Today's date is November 22nd, 2011 AD. Beautiful. Old Town, Alexandria, Virginia. Looking across my picture window here at the Watergate Hotel, right across the Potomac over in Washington, D.C. The lights are pretty. The airplanes are flying over my place here every 5 minutes, but hey, I don't mind. I'm doing good. Life is good. I got some wealth. 2020's in the house. I've got some wealth. I've got some gold. I've got some silver. I got a well-stocked fridge. I've got honey-baked ham just down the road. I got a couple of cars. Let me just go ahead and put this out there. Let me just go ahead and put this out there before I get started. Take a listen to this. Here's what I was laughing at. Take a listen to this and tell me what you think.
And let me ask you this. Do you think Jimmy is roaming around the White House tonight trying to find a meatloaf to warm himself up on?
I don't think the cod has eaten meatloaf.
Who the hell are they? They're only from Georgia. Oh, let me tell you something. I am so sick of Washington and all its works and all them politicians down there and them congressmen and the congressmen. Boy, I bet you won't find none of them congressmen signing down their electric blankets tonight. Which if they did, their secretaries would get up and go home. Oh, readers, the Democrats is doing a whole Democrat. And you put them in there. Yeah, that's the face you had on you when you come back in the polls. Well, the Democrats' way of running this country is to go tell us all how we ought to make sacrifices. God did made on that stuff. But they're all going to have us over the hill to the poorhouse. We ain't going to be able to drive over there because we ain't got no gas. So we're going to have to walk it.
The Reader's Digest says walking is very good for you.
Oh, ain't that lovely? The Reader's Digest can always put a little joy into poverty. This is my whole plan. My whole plan is this whole thing with the energy and everything. This is all a conspiracy. Don't you know that? It's a conspiracy there. Listen. For years, all our lives, they've been telling us to go out and buy stuff that use energy. You know, all electrical stuff. Like electric toasters, electric ovens, electric stove, electric stereo, electric TV, electric race, electric hair blower, electric knives, electric every damn thing. Not to mention the cars. And now, after all the big corporations there make the billions and billions of dollars worth of profits, signals, wham, they're changed. And after telling us for years that we can't live without this junk, now they tell us that we gotta live without it. The country is going straight into the dumper.
It's so true. It's so true. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Let's get right down to it right here now. I wanted to talk about something. I wanted to talk about Barack Hussein Obama, and I wanted to talk. Yeah. I know. That's the only thing I really talk about. I know. I hear the jokes. It's all funny. It's all real good. I understand. I dig it. But hey, I want to talk about something else right now because it's been weighing on me for a while. This whole idea of redistribution of wealth. Because, you know, I got a little wealth. You know, I'm not rich. I'm rich in a lot of ways. But, you know, I retired from the Marine Corps, you know, after a long time. And, you know, so I got a steady check coming in from the government. It's pretty sizable given the time, the length of service and all that. So it's pretty good. I could stand just to live off of that for the rest of my life and be very, very comfortable. But I invested in some stocks and some internet companies back in the 80s. And I was able to acquire a couple of degrees during the course of my career. And I parlayed that into some consulting work. And that's doing pretty good. And so I'm doing all right. The future's so bright, I got to wear shades. You know the story. And so I won't say I've been very fortunate. I say I have been, you know, because luck is the residue of design, I believe, and fortunate. I guess I'm fortunate to still be breathing. The rest of the things I could control, like whether I acquired an education, whether or not I invested, you know, properly. You know, those things are not something I can say I was blessed. I could say I did those things on my own. I'm blessed to be breathing. I'm blessed to be alive because that's out of my control. The rest of it, completely within my control. But what would happen if there is someone out there, someone in a position of authority, who somehow thought that I had too much, that at some point, a point to be determined by this special someone, that I've made enough money? What would happen if there's an individual out there somewhere who has decided that I am rich enough and that I will not be allowed to become any richer? That at some point, I've made enough money. What would happen? At some point, these certain individuals would believe that I've made enough money, I've done well for myself, and maybe it's time that I be forced to share my wealth, that I be forced to share what I have out of fairness. And that it has been decided that, well, you know what, General, you spend a lot of time in the Marine Corps. You know, you got a pretty good education. You've got a pension. You don't need those two cars. You can pick a bike. Or you could buy one of these really expensive electric vehicles. You can roll like that. Give some of what you have away to charity, to someone else. Someone who wasn't fortunate, as fortunate as you. Take a listen. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
So what's working fine for them wasn't working for ordinary Americans. And we've learned that clearly. It doesn't work out fine for the country. It's got to change. Now, what we're doing, I want to be clear. We're not trying to push financial reform because we begrudge success that's fairly earned. I mean, I do think at a certain point you've made enough money.
At some point, he believes.
Mr. Obama, you both have now just taken this pledge on people
that
under.
You've made enough money.
$250,000and 200 and what? 250,000.
Well, it depends on how you calculate it, but it would be between 200 and 250,000.
All right. You have, however, said you would favor an increase in the capital gains tax. As a matter of fact, you said on CNBC, and I quote, "I certainly would not go above what existed under Bill Clinton, which was 28%. It's now 15%. That's almost doubling if you went to 28%. But actually, Bill Clinton in 1997 dropped the capital gains tax to 20%,
right.
And George Bush has taken it down to 15%. And in each instance, when the rate dropped, revenues from the tax increased. The government took in more money. And in the 1980s, when the tax was increased to 28%, the revenues went down. So why raise it at all, especially given the fact that 100 million people in this country own stock and would be affected?
Well, Charlie, what I've said is that I would look at raising the capital gains tax for purposes of fairness. We saw an article today which showed that the top 50 hedge fund managers made $29 billion last year. $29 billion for 50 individuals. And part of what has happened is that those who are able to work the stock market and amass huge fortunes on capital gains are paying a lower tax rate than their secretaries. That's not fair. And what I want is not oppressive taxation. I want businesses to thrive.
All right, hold it. What's not fair? What's not fair? That a person goes out through the sweat of their brow, through their own labor, through their own ingenuity, flyover territories in the House, Stay Mad Radio 2020, through their own ingenuity, through their own design, through their own hard work, through their own effort, through the sweat of their brow, sometimes sleeping 3-4 hours a night, staying late in the office, ruined marriages, missed family events, in order to make a better life for themselves and for their families. Oh, and by the way, make a profit for their shareholders. What's not fair about that? What part of that is not fair, Mr. Obama? Some of us work harder than others. That's just a fact. Some of us punch every single ticket. We go to high school. We get good grades. And instead of partying, we study. We study harder than the next guy. We're smarter than the next guy. We get better grades. We get into the better schools. There, we study hard again. We make the necessary connections. We don't party all night long. We study hard. We get better grades. Pretty soon, those who are in a position to bring us on board their companies, well, they hire us because they see the work ethic all throughout high school and throughout college. We're allowed by these people who hire us to make more money than the guy who didn't work hard, than the guy who didn't study hard. We do better because we are better. Then we climb steadily up the ladder, making hundreds of thousands of dollars, where that guy, I'll name him, no, I won't, my high school buddy John, I won't say his last name, smarter than me, wittier than me, more friendlier than me, more gregarious. We all thought that John Anderson would grow up and become a politician, a state senator, a senator, a congressman, mayor of Chicago, and the very least a damn alderman. While I was an introvert, I spent most of my time in the study hall. I spent most of the time after that in the books. I pissed away the whole first year of my high school and was very lucky to be moved on to the next grade because they were going to hold me back. Because back then, when I went to school, they didn't just push you from one grade to the next. There are guys who were supposed to graduate with me in my class who wound up graduating a year, 2 years later. But we thought that John was going to be the man. We were, in fact, jealous of John, me and my good friend Richard. We thought that he was going to be the rock star. But instead, John chose a different path. He chose a different path that included drugs, alcohol, and just plain thinking that he was too smart for his own good. Wound up spending some time in jail. And right now is suffering horrible health issues as a result of his drug use and just plain bad genes. Did nothing after high school, nothing at all. Both Richard and I talked recently about how we thought that John had it all. He had all the tools necessary to be a great success, and instead he pissed it all away. What's not fair, Mr. Obama? What's not fair? Let's listen to it one more time. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Senator Obama, you both have now just taken this pledge on people under $250,000 and $250,000?
Well, it depends on how you calculate it, but it would be between $200,000 and $250,000.
All right. You have, however, said you would favor an increase in the capital gains tax. As a matter of fact, you said on CNBC, and I quote, "I certainly would not go above what existed under Bill Clinton, which was 28%. It's now 15%. That's almost a doubling if you went to 28%. But actually, Bill Clinton in 1997 signed legislation that dropped the capital gains tax to 20%.
Right.
And George Bush has taken it down to 15%. And in each instance, when the rate dropped, revenues from the tax increased. The government took in more money. And in the 1980s, when the tax was increased to 28%, the revenues went down. So why raise it at all, especially given the fact that 100 million people in this country own stock and would be affected?
Well, Charlie, what I've said is that I would look at raising the capital gains tax for purposes of fairness. We saw an article today which showed that the top 50 hedge fund managers made $29 billion last year. $29 billion.
All right, hold it right there. The top hedge fund managers made $29 billion. Probably because the top hedge fund managers spent years in the books. They spent years studying their craft. They spent years trolling, not hanging out with the boys, not partying like it's 1974, but studying, getting into schools like Harvard and Yale. And, of course, my alma mater, Georgetown, and William and Mary, and the Naval Academy. Getting into good schools, studying, getting good grades, and getting those opportunities. What's not fair? What's not fair? They made billions of dollars. That's right. They made billions of dollars. It's their money. What's not fair? I think Mr. Obama proposes that those guys who punched all the tickets in the right order and became successes in life are supposed to give that all up to those who didn't even try. And hell, even if you did try and you didn't succeed, that's the way it is. There's a reason why there's a first place and a last place. Let's finish off this clown's remarks. Disgust me.
Well, 50 individuals. And part of what has happened is that those who are able to work the stock market and amass huge fortunes on capital gains are paying a lower tax rate than their secretaries. That's not fair. And what I want is not oppressive taxation. I want businesses to thrive, and I want people to be rewarded for their success. But what I also want to make sure is that our tax system is fair and that we are able to finance health care for Americans who currently don't have it, and that we're able to invest in our infrastructure and invest in our schools. And you can't do that for free, and you can't take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children and our grandchildren and then say that you're cutting taxes, which is essentially what John McCain has been talking about. And that is irresponsible. I believe in the principle that you pay as you go. And you don't propose tax cuts unless you are closing other tax breaks for individuals, and you don't increase spending unless you're eliminating some spending or you're finding some new revenue. That's how we got an additional $4 trillion worth of debt under George Bush. That is helping to undermine our economy, and it's going to change when I'm president of the United States.
And so it has. And so it has changed.
The Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth. The tragedies of the civil rights movement was because the civil rights movement became so court-focused, I think that there was a tendency to lose track of the political and community organizing and activities on the ground that are able to put together the actual coalitions of power through which you bring about redistributive change.
I don't know.
Good morning and welcome to Odyssey on WBEZ Chicago, 91.5 FM. And we're joined by Barack Obama, who is Illinois State Senator from the 13th District and a senior lecturer in the law school at the University of Chicago.
You know, if you look at the victories and failures of the civil rights movement and its litigation strategy in the court, I think where it succeeded was to vest formal rights in previously dispossessed peoples, so that I would now have the right to vote. I would now be able to sit at a lunch counter and order, and as long as I could pay for it, I'd be okay. But the Supreme Court never ventured into the issues of redistribution of wealth and sort of more basic issues of political and economic justice in the society. And to that extent, as radical as I think people tried to characterize the Warren Court, it wasn't that radical. It didn't break free from the essential constraints that were placed by the Founding Fathers in the Constitution, at least as it's been interpreted, and Warren Court interpreted it in the same way that generally the Constitution is a charter of negative liberties, says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf. And that hasn't shifted. And one of the, I think, the tragedies of the civil rights movement was because the civil rights movement became so court-focused, I think that there was a tendency to lose track of the political and community organizing and activities on the ground that are able to put together the actual coalitions of power through which you bring about redistributive change. In some ways, we still suffer from that.
Let's talk with Karen. Good morning, Karen. You're on Chicago Public Radio.
Hi. The gentleman made the point that the Warren Court wasn't terribly radical. My question is, with economic changes. My question, is it too late for that kind of reparative work economically, and is that the appropriate place for reparative economic work to take place?
You mean the court?
The courts, or would it be legislation at this point?
I'm showing my bias here as a legislator as well as a law professor, but I'm not optimistic about bringing about...
All right, stop right there. Stop right there. I, your humble host, have the title of college professor. And simply by having the PhD behind my name, I can get tenure or a teaching position at any college, well, a few, and be titled professor. Barack Hussein Obama was no professor. He was a glorified teaching assistant at the University of Chicago. Now, I know it's a small point, but it's an important point, because here we have a man pretending to be someone he is not, something that he is obviously not. And I know for a fact, being a Chicagoan, that Barack Hussein Obama was not a professor of any goddamn thing. Excuse my language. Let's continue.
Major redistributive change through the courts. The institution just isn't structured that way. You just look at very rare examples where during the desegregation era, the court was willing to, for example, order change at the cost money to a local school district. And the court was very uncomfortable with it. It was hard to manage. It was hard to figure out. You start getting into all sorts of separation of powers issues, in terms of the court monitoring or engaging in a process that essentially is administrative and takes a lot of time. The court's just not very good at it, and politically, it's very hard to legitimize opinions from the court in that regard. So, I think that although you can craft theoretical justifications for it legally, I think you can. Any three of us sitting here could come up with a rationale for bringing about economic change through the courts.
It's not that I want to punish your success. I just want to make sure that everybody who is behind you, that they've got a chance at success too. I think when you...
All right. So is it the president's job to make sure that everybody has a chance at success? Or is it the person's lineage the product of his family upbringing. It was my mother, it was my mom and my dad who took on the responsibility to make sure that I had a chance at success. My mother and my father, my grandmother, my aunts, my uncles, they all pitched in. It took a damn village for a badass like me. But it didn't take a president to do anything about that. It didn't take the president of the United States to make sure that I had opportunities or to make sure that I took advantage of opportunities. Some people are just plain damn lazy. Some people simply don't give a damn. And some people want to blame Whitey for all their problems. What are you going to do about that, Mr. Barack Hussein Obama? Are you going to make sure that my lazy-ass friend John, who in high school we thought was going to be the Mac of all daddies, senator, congressman, president, certainly mayor of Chicago. Oh, man, if you had seen my friend John, I'm talking thick glasses, dark skin, roly-poly, but boy, did he have the gift, and he didn't need a teleprompter either. He talked to people. Everybody loved him. He was laughing, gregarious all the time. Voted most to succeed. In our yearbook, in our high school yearbook, most likely to succeed, John Anderson. Smart. Oh, B's and A's and B's. I was so jealous of him. Attended the 30-year high school reunion. John didn't even have money to get a ticket. John didn't have a way to get there. Certainly down on his luck, living with his sick father in a senior home because he had no other place to go. What would you do about that, Mr. Obama? What would you do about John Anderson? Oops, God. I said his last name, I'm sorry. What would you do about John? What would you do about John, my high school buddy, who pissed it all away? Is it your responsibility, Mr. President, to make sure that John has opportunities? Because John certainly did, and he pissed it all away. What would you do about that? What would you do? Is it the responsibility of the government to ensure a level playing field? Is it true that at a certain point we've made enough money? Is it true that our success should be limited, our individual achievement should be limited if we get too far ahead of our neighbor? If flyover territory has a few hundred thousand more in the bank than me, if beach bum has a couple hundred thousand more than me, should beach bum be throttled back so that I can catch up? At what point has an individual or a company made enough money, Mr. Obama? Let's quickly go over the redistribution of wealth. We'll do that before this show is over. And I want to find out if any of you agree with this idea of wealth redistribution. We're going to go over the arguments for and the arguments against. Tell me what you think about it. Now, give it some thought, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Excellence in Broadcasting presents Liberals of Genius.
Liberals of Genius.
Today, we salute you, Mr. President of the United States.
President
You single-handedly managed to choke all the life out of the world's greatest economy in record time.
10% unemployment.
No one else could have apologized more, spent more, or built a rat maze healthcare system from hell that only the IRS could love.
What were you thinking?
Thanks to you, FDR will be known as a conservative, Carter will look presidential, and Joseph Stalin won't seem like such a bad guy.
Joe was misunderstood.
So crack open a good book, sit on your butt, and help your buddies with a snowball's chance in November.
Mr. President's the one we weren't waiting for.
What college do you dream of sending your kids to? Yale, Harvard, Princeton.
Forget it. Those are the universities of yesteryear. The school of the future is COC.
Community Organizer College.
I'm a graduate, and I just took control of General Motors. And now I'm thinking of taking over Chrysler, too. Maybe. Or selling it to an Italian bicycle company, I think.
Want your kids to run a giant company? Or even an entire industry, like healthcare, banking, or insurance? Enroll him or her at COC, Community Organizer College.
Now you want your darlings to have trillions of dollars of money to spread around? Apply to Community Organizer College. Our teachings are based on a major breakthrough in education. It's not what you know, it's what people think you know.
At COC, Community Organizer College, we don't waste time teaching English, history, math, science, or business management.
We teach cool. We teach pompous. We teach teleprompter, doublespeak, seducing the media.
Community Organizer College.
Where your kids can learn to run a company or a country. Who knows? Maybe the entire planet.
Community Organizer College. Capacity is limited. Better act now. For an application, dial 1-800-ACORN-COC.
It's not what you know. It's what people think you know.
Do you know how much is too much?
Hit me again.
Do you know when to say when?
Well, Pelosi's coming over. Make it a double.
Studies show that those who overindulge exhibit signs of arrogance.
I don't count my drinks because I'm the president.
Overconfidence.
This is the day we stop the seas from rising. Or was it yesterday?
The inability to think clearly on one's own.
Where's my teleprompter? I gotta talk to those kindergarten kids.
You think you're funny, but no one else does.
Let's give the Dalai Lama a set of cufflinks and send him out the back door.
Mr. President, let's don't do that.
And a profound inability to listen to others.
Lama's funny. You don't know funny.
If a friend, relative, or leader of the free world exhibits any of these warning signs, don't let them drive, operate heavy machinery, or sign any important documents.
Where's that health care bill?
And consider moderating their alcohol intake before it's too late.
I know a place that you can go. Oh, get your house and use it. Go ahead, abuse it. You can do anything. Go out and have a swing. I am the banking queen. Your heart desires to be Jones or show me hi. My friends, advantage are needed. Do it by way of feeding while it starts crashing. That doesn't mean a thing. I'm still the banking queen. Never thankful a single thing. Banking queen, don't complain or you'll hear me scream.
You know, sometimes I catch myself singing. Sometimes I catch myself singing along with the banking queen. Oh, man, I tell you, it's catchy. Everybody remembers the disco. A lot of us remember the disco days. And ABBA and I know I do. And this not only is this tune written and performed by Paul Shanklin is catchy, but it's damn funny. And he sounds just like Barney Frank. So every once in a while I'll find myself you know, singing along, and you know, I am the banking queen. No, yeah, you don't want to hear it. But hey, let's get on with the show. The premise is this, and we're talking about wealth redistribution, and you're listening to the C. Robert Jones Show. Situation report. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. Arguments for, well, going back to biblical times, there have been protests about the concentration of wealth. And it seems that there must be some underlying reasons why this remains a popular idea. Several arguments can and should be made in favor of a more equitable distribution of wealth by the left. They make this all the time. So the arguments for, let's go through them line by line. The moral argument, that's right. Many of the major religions condemn the accumulation of wealth. The most obvious example is found in the well-known sayings of Jesus. But many Eastern religions expect their true followers to disdain wealth, or in some cases, material possessions altogether, except if you're on the south side of Chicago and you happen to be the pastor of a mega church, 16, 18,000 screaming folks coming to your church and putting money in the collection plates. And the preacher, Reverend Wright and some others, driving out the back after the end all sweaty and getting into their fine limos or their Cadillacs or BMWs or Mercedes-Benz. I remember when it used to be just a Cadillac, but now they've branched out. And then rolling out. At that point, it's okay to accumulate wealth. Now, how about the fairness argument? All those people come into the world equally helpless. As they do, ultimately reach at least approximate equity of condition when they mature. People have an innate sense of what is fair, as many psychological experiments have demonstrated. The intrinsic sense of fairness requires basic economic equality. Does anyone agree with that? Or perhaps the economic efficiency argument, which states having a population with gross inequalities of wealth causes economic inefficiencies. For example, if too many people are too poor, there will be limited markets for the output of industry and agriculture. This will limit the growth potential of any economy. Some also argue that excessive wealth produces waste as the rich spend their money on items which are economically inefficient, buying jewelry instead of investing in new enterprises. Or perhaps the argument that the social stability is important. For example, when socialites get too out of balance, societies get too out of balance, social unrest increases, as we're seeing today with the OWS movement. In the most extreme cases, this leads to civil disturbances or revolution. This resentment against the wealthy may lead to their death or banishment and the forcible taking of their property. Just take their stuff. The most popular cited example is in the French Revolution. We were all there, right? But there are many other cases. Even where the rebellion doesn't succeed, the damage to the society may be severe and extremely long-lasting. Or perhaps the Democrat argument. Or the Democratic argument, perhaps. Should we go there? Which states that the concentration of wealth in a small group allows for anti-democratic influences on social policy. The wealthy have the ability to create their own think tanks and astroturf front organizations, such as the Tea Party has been labeled. These are, well, they're used to create the perception that the public is in support of their self-serving objectives. Recent studies have shown how such techniques were used in the repeal of the estate tax debate, as well as the rise of new factions opposing the liberal social policies of the Episcopalian Church, the Episcopal Church. When such vast amounts of money are under the control of a tiny group, the basic mechanisms of democracy are undermined. Does anybody agree? I sure the hell don't. So now we've gone for the arguments for redistribution of wealth, why I should give one of my cars to somebody who doesn't have one, basically for fear that, you know, society's going to collapse or they're going to just come and take my stuff. They're just going to rebel. They're just going to say, hey, that dude's sitting in that fine, fancy house, and I know he's surrounded by five 26, 27-inch computer screens. And he's got a computer underneath each one of those screens. He's got too many computers. Let's go and take one. Uh-huh. So let's move on with the argument against. Now we're talking. Private property. Private property is sacred or inviolable. Society is based upon a person's right to the product of their labors or their ancestors' labor, and thus the state has no right to take it away. Now, who wouldn't agree with that? Wealthy people create growth opportunities for society. Number two, only those with a large amount of capital can start up or expand new businesses. If they don't exist, the economy would not grow either as well or at all. Number three, wealthy people are the only ones who can support the arts. Well, I don't know about that. Throughout history, though, it has been the wealthy who have commissioned fine art, musical compositions, museums, and other monuments of civilization. Think of the Guggenheim and so many others. Or perhaps poor people are lazy or inferior. Well, this argument is a variant of the Calvinist belief that salvation is found through work. Work. Thus, those who become wealthy are blessed and deserve their rewards. Those who are poor are to blame in some fashion for their position in society. And government intervention to alter the balance will only lead to even more lazy people and the eventual breakdown of society. Does that make sense? Let me give you a more modern example. 99 weeks. Now, I happen to be one of those 1%ers who actually pays taxes, which means at the end of the year, unless I write off a whole bunch of stuff that perhaps I shouldn't, I'm going to have to write Uncle Sam a check. I'm going to have to write Mr. Obama a check. Thus, pay taxes. I'm going to have to pay, I have paid state and local taxes. I have paid state taxes and city taxes. I pay approximately $3,000 a year in state taxes. I pay about $700 in city taxes. These tax dollars will help to go to pay for someone, not to work. Well, that's right. 99 weekers. Unemployment compensation. The money I pay in taxes will go to help someone become self-sufficient for 99 weeks without actually going out to get a job. A redistribution of wealth. Let us assume for the moment that the arguments for redistribution are more persuasive than those against. Then how would we redistribute? How would it be achieved? There seems to be only two avenues. Just two. The first is through the appropriation of wealth. Now, this has been done several times in history. Henry V seized the wealth of the Catholic Church in England and kept part of the treasury and redistributed part to his supporters. And during the French Revolution, much of the wealth of the aristocracy was seized by local authorities or looted by the populace. The result of such drastic actions are hard to foresee. It may lead to a permanent realignment of power in society, as in England, or it may lead to anarchy and the rise of a dictator, as in the case of France. There are no easy answers. None, mind you. The second approach, the approach taken by our current president, is through taxation. Once again, there is a historical example. For example, in Britain, during the 20th century, the government decided that the hereditary landowners had too much wealth. Imagine that. They established a plan whereby the wealth would be transferred over many decades via death duties or death taxes. As the lord of the manor died off, his heirs would have to pay a tax on the value of the estate, the death tax or estate tax. We have that here. This has had an effect of gradually transferring the wealth of the aristocracy to the government. One difficulty has been in that in many cases, the estates are worth so much that the heirs cannot find buyers and they get transferred to the National Trust. This is the rub of all transfer wealth schemes. in order to tax the wealthy at a rate that forces them to sell part of their assets, there must be buyers who can afford to purchase the items. A painting appraised at $1 million is worth nothing if there are no buyers. Even assets like stocks depend upon the pool of buyers for them to be convertible to cash. So here we are. I currently own three properties, and I have a farm. It was foreseen by my ancestors that their wealth would be seized, and much of it was transferred to one of the few living relatives at the time, me, to be a responsible person. And I was tasked with not letting their wealth or property fall into the hands of the government or to be sold. It was judged that my siblings were not so understanding and that they would sell the property to the highest bidder, take their cash and run. So they got nothing. They got no property. When grandma checked out, granddad, great-grandma, granddad, guess who got all the stuff? Me. Because I told him I wouldn't sell it. That I'd sell my soul to the devil first before I sold their farms and their land and their houses. So guess who got all the goodies? Me. And they avoided the dreaded death tax, estate taxes. They gave me all this crap for just a couple of dollars. Many years ago. But here's the rub. For me, it's not going to be so easy to keep that promise. It won't be so easy to keep my family's land in the family. It won't be so easy for me to keep the house I'm currently living in the family, or the properties in Florida and other places. It's not going to be so easy for me to keep my promise anymore. Unless things change drastically. Folks, make no mistake. We're living in interesting times. And always remember that that was always meant to be. That phrase was always meant to be a curse. We've got 1 minute left. I want to thank everybody for listening. Everybody who came into the room tonight, God bless you. And God bless the United States of America. And thank you for listening. Please come back tomorrow. We'll get more into this whole mess. In the meantime, please help me keep the devil way, way down in the hole. Good night, folks. God bless you. God bless the United States of America. Good night.
Walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at His command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. the Lord. Don't pay heed to temptation, for his hands are so cold. You gotta help me keep the devil